Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Welcome to the latest PR Moment podcast. This week, we're talking to John Rhodes, who's partner at Bolt, and we're going to be talking about what are the most important data points behind an organization's reputation. This conversation, I guess, is kind of based on a report that Bolt and Metal Capital recently released called Trust in 2021. The report analyzed more than 40 million conversations and pieces of content across more than 2,500 companies. But before we talk about that, just as ever, a mention about PR Moment's patron scheme. If you're a regular consumer of our content, including this podcast, and you fancy making a contribution to help fund PR Moment, now you can. We have three different patron tiers: the Daily Parker tier, the Chadlington tier, and the Edward Bernays tier. Finally, thanks so much to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
A pleasure. Now, this is an interesting piece of research, isn't it? I mean, you could talk more broadly about it in a moment or two, but in essence, what are you trying to do? You're trying to put some science into reputation management, are you?
Yes. This is the Holy Grail. This is the PR Holy Grail, the search for meaningful data.
Don't underplay it, John.
the search for meaningful data that... explains, you know, the wonderful job that we all do every day. My starting place for this was a frustration about a lack of data, a lack of evidence, just in corporate affairs and corporate comms more general. And I'm somebody I've been agency side for probably the first 10, 15 years of my life. I then went in-house and I've been a director of corporate affairs. And in that in-house role, I used to always get slightly frustrated by, I always felt as if I had the worst looking slides in the management pack. Why didn't I have the charts that everybody else had for the board pack and the management reports? And sort of, there was also a lack of consistency, a lack of sort of continuity month to month, and a lack of comparability, I guess. Sometimes with a board pack, you felt that you were in show and tell mode. So it was a little bit of sort of, this is what I did last month. And what I did last month quite often changed month to month. So I was telling the story to somebody earlier this week that you could turn up in September at a board meeting and show somebody a chart which showed all this wonderful press coverage you'd got and all this wonderful positive press coverage you'd got, and take the applause from all your sort of colleagues around the table. And then you turn up in October, a month later, and try to explain to people that, well, actually this month, what I did was I stopped press coverage. And so the press coverage is lower. And so I should be getting applause for that. And it's sort of that lack of ability to actually measure anything and monitor anything properly that I think was where this sort of started.
Right. So go on then, talk us through, what are the most important numbers when it comes to a firm's reputation, and I suppose where are they found?
So I'll talk in a minute about this approach and just kind of how it works. This is a big data approach. So this is an attempt to use the ability we now have to look at the, you know, in this case, the internet, to look at social and media and trade media and press media and everything else, and interrogate that as data at an enormous level. But to make that manageable, what we do is we curate the data. And in curating the data, what we've done working with Metal Capital, as you mentioned earlier, is we've used three standardized models. So we use an ESG model, which is based on on SASB, the Sustainability Accounting Board. We use a trust model and a reputation model. The trust model and reputation model have been around for many, many years. They're used by various polling agencies and people. I think the trust model was first made for the World Economic Forum. The reputation model has been used by many FTSE 100 companies. Each of those models is made up of, comprises a series of drivers or dimensions or conversations, if you want to call them, whatever else. In the case of the trust model, which is the one that I think we'll talk about a little bit more about today, which is what the research that we published was about, it's made up of 24, 25 dimensions and drivers. And they can be things like conversation around product quality, a conversation around employee engagement, the conversation around the environmental impact, a conversation around problem solving. So that these are standardized models that are well proven, academically well proven. What we can do is use big data to see where companies and those conversations are happening.
Right. And where have you got the data from exactly? So is there some huge fire hose of data that you're taking Twitter's feed? You're taking, where, because there's almost endless data, isn't there, these days? So do you literally just hoover it all up, or have you made some choices?
In the first instance, we hoover it all up. Okay. And you're absolutely right. The problem isn't not enough data. The problem is quite often just absolutely too much data. And again, as an in-house, I've seen that. I want to measure things. I want to have some charts in my board pack. But actually, all these charts, how do I compare them? How do I piece them together? What do they really mean? So we do start with absolutely everything. And that does that hopefully means we're capturing all conversations. So we're capturing pretty much all of social media, anything that's sort of public social media. We're capturing all of media, and we're trying to capture everything else that's basically posted on the internet that you can scrape. So reports and websites and those sort of things. At a massive level, I think that comes out as 1.6 trillion bits of information or something ridiculous like that. The skill, as I said before, is to curate it. So you create it in two ways. The first one is, as you said at the beginning, we have identified and tagged, I think it's just about 3,000 companies now into the data set. So that reduces it. So you've got all this data out there, but we've identified these companies within it. And then using the models, ESG, trust, and reputation, we've identified where those models, the conversations in those models, occur within the data.
Right.
So,
and these the methodologies you use, can we include the links to those in the site? I don't know whether when we put this podcast live.
Absolutely. We'll find a paper that takes you through exactly how it works, because it's really interesting, isn't it? Impossible to do it as a conversation without showing you some charts.
And so what have you found? So you've let's take the trust one, or for instance, what have your what are the sort of standout things that you've when you pitch up to your clients, you can sort of give, what sort of insight are you giving them from this data?
Well, we've got some big picture stuff. So an absolutely big picture level, this piece of work we looked at European and US companies, and we looked at trust levels over the last 12 or so months. So on that big picture, we could say that trust in corporate seems to be returning after a dismal 2020. Actually, we looked a bit further back, because one of the other joys of having a data set like this is it's actually a 10-year data set. So we can have a look at what trust levels looked like in 2012 or 2016. So you can make some sort of long-term comparisons on there, and you can do that for all companies. This is what we did with this piece of work, but you can do it for specific companies, and you can look at how your company compares to another company in your sector, or how it compares to another company in a different sector. But as you say, so across the piece, US and European companies, we saw trust returning in 2021 after a sort of a dismal 2020. It's still long-term below its 2018 peak. I thought what was quite interesting was that European companies have generally had a lower trust level. It's probably something to do with culturally European audiences being slightly more skeptical. European trust levels have also been slightly more volatile than US levels. But the one thing we are seeing is that the US and Europe converging, and they're converging at a sort of a new normal, which seems to be a little bit lower trust.
Right. And I'm interested, why do you think trust peaked in 2018? I mean, obviously we've had the pandemic before then, but you know, UK wise, we're going through a pretty painful Brexit debate and that sort of thing. I mean, I know this is global research, but what are the levers that would mean that it would peak in 2018? Do you think
it is global research? Again, people can click through and they can see the charts, and I mean, one of the joys of this is you can make your own observations. I mean, you can make your own. This is objective data. Mm. The skill of the person using the data is to try to work out what are we trying to read into it. I mean, one of the things I read into the European data is, you're right, I think there was a Brexit element. I think you can see that across European companies, and there was a dip in 2016. And there was a moment where people probably did think, you know, quite what does this mean? And there was a dip, but there was a rise back, a gradual rise back, 27, 2018 into 2019. And then I think the pandemic hit, and you can see that, you know, lots of things sort of fell off a cliff.
Right. Okay. And how, I'm just thinking about, you know, corporate PR. Well, public relations has always had a measurement problem, hasn't it? I casually think most areas of marketing have had an evaluation problem, frankly. So I never like to paint or be too paranoid about PR's evaluation problem. But I mean, corporate PR, I know corporate PR people who've never considered the idea of measuring their impact. I mean, is that right? I mean, you've obviously been in corporate PR a while. I've no doubt tried to measure the impact of your work, but what you're sort of saying is that you've never felt you've done it that successfully until now.
No, I don't think I have, and I found it. I think as I became a little bit more senior in house, I found it more and more frustrating. And I think another way of looking at that frustration in a boardroom setting is that you can be very respected as an individual. And then I've worked with some really, really good corporate PR people. I mean, some really good corporate PR people, people that you would have standing next to you in the trenches and, you know, exceptionally good. But lots of them have built that reputation because of that. Actually, it's because you'd have them standing next to you, you know, in the trenches. Because they've got the battle scars or whatever it is, and they've got exceptionally good judgment. I think the frustration I had was that sitting around a table with peers, so you're sitting around a table with the HR director and two or three ops people and somebody who's running a division somewhere else. If you'd got the respect, that was great, because they looked at you and they sort of felt that, do you know what, if there's a real problem here, John's got it. It's going to be okay. You know, we've got a good team, and that's whatever else. But that was as good as it got. What you didn't get was a conversation. So I never felt that it was easy to have a conversation around reputation and risk and some of the things that we battle with every day. And it was because there wasn't exactly a sort of a common language and a common framework for other people to engage in this conversation. Is that making sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. And
I think if you're talking, if you know, when the finance director presents his slides, we can all read a balance sheet. We all know what his slides mean, and so we can all interrogate his slides, and we can all then have a conversation where we all bring something to it. And because the point is that if you're talking about corporate reputation or corporate trust, you know, this is not simply a matter for the corporate affairs director to be thinking about. You know, what you're doing in your recruitment is important. So the HR director does have something to say about this. And I think what this approach hopefully brings is that sort of common language and framework, which gives a basis for everybody functionally around the table to be able to discuss this corporate reputation thing. And it also hopefully then demonstrates where the company's going, what it should be focusing on, you know, what are the issues that are really at the heart of its reputation. So what are people talking about? What matters to this company? Where should we be focusing our time? Where are the opportunities and where are the challenges? And it should be great ammunition, obviously, for a corporate affairs director who's trying to get more budget or trying to launch a campaign or trying to explain what they're doing.
And just to be clear, you're not really putting this forward as a day-to-day comms management tool, are you? It's a bit more long-term than that, is it?
One of the problems with it is that I think every time I show it to somebody, somebody comes up with a different use case for it. And at a certain level, we've got to try and at a certain point, we've actually got to decide, do you know what, let's just focus on this thing kind of to begin with. So I came into it, as I think I've just said, you know, as a sort of a reporting tool. We've done a piece of work with somebody last year where we used it for insight. So it's more like a planning tool. You could use it in a budgetary way, but I think you're right. I think in essence, this is something you'd want to refer to probably more on a quarterly basis, because then you can see trends emerging. Right. And you can use it for looking backwards or looking forwards.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, with data, that the nice thing is, especially with vast amounts of historical data, you can model stuff, can't you? So, and you touched on it a moment ago with actually one of the things about PR, corporate PR, is that you stop things from happening as opposed to make things happen, if you see what I mean. So have you, presumably part of your thinking behind this is that you'll be able to model things in, I mean, you know, these days we always put AI at the front of that, don't we? And it all sounds much more technical. But in essence, you're modeling different scenarios depending on what you could do, might do, will do.
So the data itself, and you mentioned Metal Capital Partners at the beginning. So they are the data analysts, very good friends, old friends of mine, who created this or founded this about 2 years ago. And they're currently selling the data into hedge funds, asset managers, and other traders. So it's a city tool, and it's a city tool that was trying to fill a demand, particularly around ESG, where companies wanted to trade on the basis of ESG. They wanted to trade in companies that are either performing well on ESG or they think there's a vulnerability on ESG. And what they couldn't really trust was current ESG data, because current ESG data, a lot of the time, is filling in your own, you know, it's a tick box exercise and you fill in the boxes yourself.
Yeah, in no way robust. Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted something that was kind of objective and came from a different way. Now, their holy grail, of course, is can they correlate this data around trust and reputation to share price? There is a paper that hasn't quite been published yet because it's still being, you know, verified and whatever scientific communities have to do. But it seems to show that, yes, there is a correlation. So you can, you know, on a modeling basis, there is a pretty decent correlation between a company's reputation using these models and the share price. And what's more interesting is it's quite a nice.
What comes first? Does reputation impact share price or the other way around?
Yes. 180-day sort of average reputation seems to precede the share price move by about 3 months.
Right.
It's better for some sectors. It seems to be better for some companies within some sectors. It certainly works better for bigger companies where there's more data. But it also seems decent enough to actually trade on. So that answers one of your questions, part of your question, which is, yes, you can sort of create models and you can start to do some predictive work on it as well as looking back and seeing what the impact of something was. You can do predictive work. The other thing that I think is quite interesting, we haven't done enough of it yet, is I do want to go back and have a look at some of the sort of classic corporate comms crises that have happened. You know, if somebody out there wants to do this as a piece of work, I mean, I don't know if there's any students listening or anybody like that who wants to take this on. We would love somebody to go and dig into the data and have a look at some sort of classic comms crises and see what the shape of the reputation impact was.
Right.
Because I you know instinctively you know that if you address the crises early, you know, if you address the issue early, you can, you know, you can get through it in a shorter number of news cycles.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see whether that's true, whether different types of crises have.
On the share price question, I think, you know, it's only a trend, but normally the share price tends to return after a real big corporate crisis. After 12, 18 months, it's gone back to roughly where it was, hasn't it? But that's by no means a definitive piece of analysis. But when you so the modelling is sort of possible, but in that sense you can, there's a job to be done on the tech, I suppose, is there, because that's the crucial part of this, isn't it, to build the software element of it so that you can ask these questions in a sort of automated fashion, right?
I guess what we've been doing is over the last year or so is trying to work out what it is that a corporate affairs team, a communications team, would want from this data. So as I say, you know, it was originally designed for use in the city. Now, the way that city firms usually take data is they take it as a direct feed, a who's, as you called it earlier. They take it as a direct feed, and that direct feed will go as an API, will go straight into their own systems, and it's just another form of data, and they'll go manipulate it in whatever way. I mean, I've certainly spent the last 18 months improving my own tech skills and my own sort of spreadsheet skills and API skills, and I can now pull data in slightly different ways than I ever thought I'd be able to do.
Yeah.
I think what we've been doing is trying to work out what those use cases are and what different types of data are useful. I mean, fundamentally, we've got 3,000 companies. We can group them into different sectors. We can group them into subsectors. We can pick out the conversations that are most significant. So we can tell you what's most material to individual companies and to individual sectors. And then I think the thing we haven't really talked about here is for every conversation that we pick up, every piece of data we pick up, there's a sentiment element to it as well. So that's where the AI comes in, and it's a positive, neutral, negative sentiment on it. And again, even if you've got that, you can then look at net sentiment, which is the amount of positive you've got, less the amount of negative you've got. That's quite interesting. You might also be interested in just the absolute negative. You know, so where's the most criticism coming from? Or you might be interested in add the negative and the positive together and divide it by the neutral. So how much of the conversation has got opinion? So which are the issues out there that are the most contentious, if you like? Yeah. So there's so many different ways you can play with this data and start to think about what are people talking about, you know, what matters to my company, and where should I be spending my time?
What trends are there on? What are the most contentious issues? Is it things like global warming? Is it politics? You know,
trust data that we this trust thing that we did, the two most material drivers, the things that are really most affecting trust, we found were problem solving and CEO, and these were where the positives were. So companies were really getting rewarded for being seen to be able to solve problems. You know, and you dig a little bit further into that, and that's companies who've managed supply chain issues. That's companies that have managed to keep trading all the way through a pandemic. And then they were also being rewarded. Companies were being rewarded where they had a CEO that was fronting up, and you know, a visible management team who were sort of taking responsibility. So those were the kind of the two biggest.
And on the negative, what were people being punished? What were companies being punished?
Well, they were being punished. They were being punished for the same things. So it's kind of companies that weren't doing that that were kind of being punished. Those are, you know, what we find is, in the first instance, those are the material issues. Those are the things that people are talking about.
But interesting, are those, I mean, I'm sure there's different trends by sector, but are the trends, does it depend what type of sector you're in as a business, or actually do those sorts of key themes that mean that those reputation levers, if you like, are they broadly similar amongst most types of organizations, like, for example, the CEO and the problem solving elements?
Yes. So they're broadly similar across most organizations. One of the things that we do, which is quite interesting on the ESG model, for example, is if you look at the balance between E, S, and G, I mean, that does fundamentally change for most companies. And again, you know, I'm sure people who've sat in boardrooms and advised companies over time, you know, you spend an awful lot of time talking about the environment. We all have recently, actually, for almost every sector, it's the social and the governance issues that are really where the reputation is being formed. Mm-hmm. But that's not every sector. So, you know, in different sectors, you'll see that that balance across different sectors. In terms of sectors and the trust model that we've just done here, I mean, on the downside, I mean, extractives, unsurprisingly, are sitting there at the bottom. You know, but even then, there are sort of ups and downs over the course of the past 10 years. And when you dig into individual companies, you can see certain companies in, you know, extractives and mining that have done better than others. At the top end, I think some of the infrastructure and transportation companies have seemed to have done well, which is quite interesting. Food and beverage, consumer goods were relatively flat, possibly just a little bit downward. And healthcare has had probably the bumpiest ride through the pandemic.
Okay. And just finally, John, I can hear the sort of this excitement in your voice. Is that where do you? I know Bolt is sort of, you know, this is a Bolt project alongside Metal, but do you, as a corporate PR guy, you're quite excited by this, I think, are you?
Yeah, I genuinely think, having cast around for different ways of doing this for a long time, I genuinely think that this has enormous potential. It's far from being a finished product, but you know, we're working with a handful of people at the moment doing various different things and various different use cases, and I think people are seeing real value in it. And you know, I would love to just do more over the next couple of years, and to sort of, you know, to build out the use case and just see just how far we can take it. But I do think it's a way of bringing other people into the broader conversation around risk and reputation that we as corporate affairs people have all the time, and providing that framework and language to mean that we're taken even more seriously.
Yeah. Well, in the end, when you're talking to your peers with an organization, you need to have some data to back up and show a bit of impact, don't you? And this sounds like it's gonna help that cause.
Yep. I hope so.
John Rhodes, partner at Bolt, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.